Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we just reported, the Park City Council getting an earful from those living in Brighton Estates. The council also approving more than $11 million for new water treatment projects. In the studio with a recap, I have Councilmember Tim Henney. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
Let's start with the public comment from Brighton Estates. I had taken a tour up there to see the new fencing, the gates, the rope line that the city had installed down Jeep Hill to show the way. At the same time, residents seem very upset that the city's not listening, staff's being rude, dismissive. I mean, how do you respond to all of that?
The story that Rick put together, I think, laid it out pretty clearly. There seems to be enough disappointment to go around for everybody, maybe even enough to spill over into Wasatch County. How do you respond to that? Well, as an example, last night, that was public comment. We normally, during public comment, do not respond. And we spent an hour and a half not only taking public comment, but also then responding to public comment. And we started that out with a staff presentation from Heinrich and Wendy to kind of lay the groundwork or the framework for what we're trying to achieve here and kind of address intent. You know, the intent of that land and the intent of buying that land was to put a conservation easement on it and protect the conservation values of that property. And everything that we've done from putting up fences and creating safety corridors that can be used at the request of Brighton Estates as an accommodation to them, we even have written into the language of the conservation easement some flexibility that wouldn't normally be in a conservation easement to address those sorts of accommodations. You know, we have to have a place to start, and we tried to get that starting point with Wendy and Heinrich and then build from there to present actual facts and have people on the same page at least. And we just can't get there. We cannot get there with certain members of Brighton Estates. It's not everybody. There are many people in Brighton Estates who are reasonable and want to work toward a negotiated accommodation that would benefit everyone. But the people controlling the narrative right now do not share that perspective. They are very augured in their traditional uses, which have been trespassing, which have not been enforced, and they're making legal claims that do not exist. And when they make legal claims that do not exist, the natural reaction from Park City Legal Department is to go, prove it.
So a step back there, is that what we need to do then, is just boil it down to whether or not they do have legal access? I mean, that would mean going to the courts, right?
If you're going to come and make accusations and claim that you have legal rights, then you're going to have to prove it. You can also say, let's not do that. Let's not take that approach. Let's look at these proposed accommodations and see if there's something here that could work. We've made many proposals that they have rejected based on their claim of legal access, prescriptive easement access across these tracks, which basically are on now Park City taxpayer property, which is within the conservation easement property. And, you know, if you're going to do that, then you're going to find that there's going to be some resistance on the other side to prove your claim of legal access. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with these, you know, accusations that are being made about Park City trying to close off access from Park City on roads. Are you kidding me? This sounds like a Mark Stemler conspiracy theory. I mean, maybe he should be representing these folks. It's unbelievable. They have public right-of-way on dedicated public roads that gives them access to their property. They've always had that. They have always used these, they've used these other tracks within private property, and it's never been enforced, and they've become used to that. So, you know, if you're going to claim that that's a legal right, you're going to have to prove it. That's all I'm saying. You have legal right on the public roads, and they do not like that legal right because, you know, for a variety of reasons.
So does this go to Steve Joyce's comment, though? I mean, who is the city supposed to listen to and to talk to? Because X wants one thing and Y resident wants another.
Well, there's so many moving parts within the wants. I to some degree it does. And if you were to take the very extreme view of Park City representing just Park City, you'd say, look, Park City taxpayers bought this land to preserve it, to keep it open, to have it uncluttered with a bunch of stuff at the Y parking area, to be able to access it for hiking, for non-motorized recreation purposes. And now, you know, a small group of people is asking for special treatment and certain privileges that aren't available to everybody else. That makes no sense whatsoever. That would be an extreme view. The other end of that continuum is, yeah, you know, let's just leave it the way it has been. It's the wild, wild west up there. It seems to have worked well, but it hasn't worked well. I mean, we have forest fire danger. We have people camping up there. We have people trespassing. We have litter. We have, an unsightly situation, at a minimum, an unsightly situation with a bunch of recreational vehicles that get parked up there at the Y parking area. We have access from people who shouldn't have access up there. So what do we do about that? We try to find something in the middle through accommodations that do address safety issues and meet the needs of the people who live up there year-round. And that is a position that council has always been on and has always worked towards, and we continually get rejected with those proposed accommodations.
One of those accommodations, of course, is Jeep Hill. Again, that goes smack dab through the conservation area.
No, it doesn't. It goes down the side of the conservation easement. It's actually on Brighton Estates property, Jeep Hill.
Okay.
And it's not a problem. I mean, you know, we've said, okay, you know, we can let you use Jeep Hill, and we're going to put the fence up here to delineate the property boundary. You can use Jeep Hill, but you can't then continue down Jeep Hill and blast right through the conservation property to get to Brighton Estates. You're going to have to then go through the roads of Brighton Estates that lead you to your property.
And that's not how they want to do it.
It's not the desire line, you know. I mean, this is about the desire line versus the legal right. And we're saying, you know, yes, you do have legal rights to access your property. Use your legally designated access corridors.
Yeah, I think there's some concern saying that you've kind of forced them now through a very narrow gate.
Yeah, I think the narrowness of the gate is probably the least of the issues. You know, gate widths are easily addressed, and if that is the case, then, we can address that. But there's probably more discovery to be done on, you know, what size gates need to be up there and all that kind of thing.
So what is the status then at the parking at the Y? We had heard earlier this year that Wasatch County had delineated, you know, a 60-foot easement there to allow for parking for Brighton Estates?
I don't know what Wasatch County's intention is with the roads. You know, they control the roads, and there's a certain width of road that is part of the right-of-way, and what they allow in that right-of-way is up to Wasatch County. So, I mean, you know, again, we've said, if you have an agreement with Wasatch County, show us the agreement. We have seen nothing. And so what we have said is, because the Y, it extends beyond the road right-of-way. So they are parking a bunch of vehicles. Some of them are recreational, some of them for transportation. But there's a variety of stuff that accumulates up there over the winter. And we've said, we will not allow that to happen on our property at the Y. Now, if they can work out something with Wasatch County, that's a different matter. They just have to show us the agreement. There has been nothing that has been shown. So what we've said is, we would like to move that parking space down Pine Canyon Road, build a parking lot that would be for both Park City residents and designated spots for those year-round residents of Brighton Estates. And they've said no.
Let's move on to the water projects. More than $11 million, I believe, all be getting approved last night to treat basically our kind of mine tunnels, both Judge and Spiro. Certainly not cheap, but you had heard that it could have been a lot more, but a renegotiated agreement with the state water agencies cut that by millions.
Yeah, the stipulated compliance agreement, I think I've got that right, is something that we entered into back in 2014, and it would have required a much larger treatment plant, a much more involved process, treating much more water. And credit to the Utah Division of Water Quality, who had a representative there last night, and as well as Clint McAfee and our entire water department, who have worked very hard on the old stipulated agreement to come to an amended stipulated agreement, which we approved last night. The state still has to approve it, but all indications are that they will, because it's coming from their expert in conjunction with Park City. And it saves $30 million right off the top on capital projects. So that's huge. And we're talking enormous figures here. I mean, the amount of money that we spend on water is it's mind-blowing. So we're saving $30 million, and that's about a 26% reduction of what the old project was. But that's a big reduction. It's going to have an impact on water rates, and it's going to allow us to keep our water rate increases basically CPI related versus these big jumps that we've had to make in the past to get us up to the level that we need to be at, which we are at under this new agreement.
Yeah. And what the agreement calls for is basically taking care of the worst part of the water problem, the arsenic, the antimony, the zinc. I'm not sure what the worst part is. But if in fact that doesn't do what it's supposed to do, we would have to come back and perhaps build $30 million worth of treatment.
Well, that's true, Leslie, but there's been an awful lot of discovery and work and experimentation that's gone into this. You know, they're not just saying, hey, I hope this works. They're basing it on years of working on it and testing, and everybody, including the state, is comfortable that this is, we got a 99% chance of having clean water under this new agreement. There is the slim chance that it doesn't work and we have to come back and revisit and do something new. But it's a great step in the right direction, a huge plus. And, you know, water, because it's so enormous and because they do so many things and so many moving parts, they don't get a lot of credit for all that they are doing. But these guys in the water department are leading on sustainability and also making significant changes like this to the benefit of the community.
Council also got a briefing on this summer's Kimball Art Festival. Positive?
Yeah, you know, there's always this rub and friction between the merchants and the festival. And it's funny because some of these things I have never really even thought about. You know, I come to the Friday locals and I walk up and down. And then I don't think about, you know, well, what if I came back on Saturday night and I wanted to go to dinner on Main Street? But how would I, you know, enter? And do I have to pay for a ticket? And once I go to, or how do I convince the people at the gate that I'm going to dinner or going to the No Name or going to the post office? I've never really tried that, to tell you the truth. I'm one of those folks who's like, it's great that it's here, but I'm going to go Friday night and then stay away for the rest and let the festival happen. But there's a rub, there's a friction between our local merchants, our local retailers, our local restaurants, and the festival. And that's something that they're highly focused on. They want to work through that. And the other one is that access. You know, there are people who are quote unquote poaching the festival by, you know, claiming that they're going in for another reason and then spending all their time at the festival and not buying the ticket. And the ticket is what generates the revenue, which is the fundraiser portion for Kimball Art Festival. And it's incredibly important to them. So they're trying to fine tune that as well. But big picture assessment, huge success, and look forward to wonderful future festivals.
Yeah, I have volunteered at the gate. It's tough.
I know, right?
Finally, just your reaction to Tuesday's election results and the city's purchase of Treasure Hill.
You know, in my wildest and most optimistic hopes, and I'm probably somebody who could be accused of being overly optimistic most of the time, I thought maybe we would get to 70% approval. I was kind of feeling the shift from initial maybe 60. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit. And as the facts were presented and people informed themselves, which was my request, you know, make an informed decision. I'm going to honor your decision and live with your decision. So therefore, I can say I don't really care about your decision, which wasn't completely true. I did have, a hope. But I'm so thrilled that people did just that. And I think as they did that, we exceeded 70% and got up to 77% approval. That exceeds the Bonanza Flat approval on the $25 million bond. Another point, I looked at my property taxes over the last 5 years because I just got my recent notice. This year versus 5 years ago, with everything being constant, so it's a good comparison. No reassessment of my values, no secondary to primary, all that kind of stuff. Everything remained constant. My property taxes went down. Not just property taxes, but the whole bill from Summit County, including the school district and all the various fees, have gone down. Not much, but they've gone down versus 5 years ago.
Okay. I think we should all do that analysis.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Tim, thanks for coming in.
You bet.
That's Park City Council Member Tim Henney. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the 8th annual Live PC, Give PC is underway. In the studio to give us an update, I have the director of the Park City Community Foundation, Katie Wright, along with Bill Rock, COO of Park City Mountain, and with Vail Resorts, the presenting sponsor for this year's efforts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Katie, well, we'll start with you. At 7 a.m., we had nearly $495,000. We've gone well over $500,000, it looks like.
$500,000 before breakfast. So I think Park City is well on its way for another incredibly generous Live PC, Give PC. We also have over 1,500 donors. And this year, our goal, it's always been about participation, but in particular this year, we're really emphasizing getting out everyone to give. And so we're hoping to hit 4,500 donors today.
Okay, Bill, as I mentioned, Vail Resorts, Epic Promise, and Park City Mountain sponsoring the overall leaderboard, so that's just one of the competitions we've got going on? Or?
Yeah, we've been part of this for a long time, and gosh, this is my fifth Live PC, Give PC in town, and so it's a great event, and we love sponsoring it. I think we changed up our sponsorship a little bit this year and did more in the bit of challenge grants as a part of our presenting sponsorship. So we've got a $5,000 challenge grant for Mountain Trails, $20,000 challenge grant for the Children's Justice Center, which, you know, is important. Work that they're doing here in our community, and then $25,000 grant to the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, which we've been part of since its inception. So that, along with sponsoring some power hours throughout the morning here and afternoon, you know, we'll be part of the whole day, and we're really excited to support this amazing effort in our community.
Okay, Katie, why the decision to go away from money and stick with donors?
Well, I mean, we passed the $2 million mark last year, and that was quite phenomenal. And honestly, every year the growth, year-over-year growth averages around 20%. But the day has always been about giving. I mean, I've heard stories, one from Bill Rock right here, about families sitting around the dining room table with their giving budget and having a conversation about where to give. And I think that gets at the heart of what this is that we all love this community. We all partake in the nonprofits. And how can we as individuals and families do our best? And that means different things for different folks. But I think this is a day that everyone can participate in. So we thought it was a really time to emphasize that important part. And as I drove here, I saw maybe 15 teenagers in front of the high school with their shirts on and their band equipment. And I was like, yes, the youth is out there, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So is there a minimum donation to become a unique donor? I've heard five, and I've heard 10. So.
I believe it's $5.
Okay. So to be a unique donor, the slate is wiped clean. Just say I contribute to five different nonprofits, I become a unique donor for all five of those nonprofits?
Yes. So it is a little confusing. So the big goal is 4,500 unique donors. And Leslie, you're only a unique donor to the big goal once, but then each nonprofit is competing for additional grant money supported by Vail Resorts and Park City Mountain. And you can be a unique donor to each nonprofit one time. So if you give to Mountain Trails three times, you only count as a unique donor to them once. So it's like a vote. If you say, I love the trails, or I care about the Peace House, you're helping them compete for these additional grant prizes.
And during the power hours, we'll match for every unique donor, we're donating $20. So if you, during those power hours, if you donate just the $5 or $10 or whatever you can afford, you'll automatically, we'll match it with $20 during that hour.
So when can we find out when the power hour is?
I'm leaving that up to Katie. That's beyond my control.
Yeah, pay attention to social media. We'll push those out throughout the day, and it's first on the draw to get those matching. And I think that's another reason why it's so compelling to give today is that chances are you might get a power hour donation. You might double your donation with a match. You're helping your nonprofit win these prizes. So it truly, your dollar has significant impact when given on this day.
Tell me, how many nonprofits have we got participating this year?
It's over 100 causes.
Okay. And again, it's between now and midnight?
Now and midnight. We'll be counting down at High West, as tradition goes. And we're really excited to have everyone participate.
And then how does Vail Resorts and Park City Mountain decide who they're going to contribute to?
Yeah, so we have our own foundation, Epic Promise Foundation here, and we have a giving council here in Park City, similar to what Katie mentioned with family giving, where we have leaders in our company who get together a few times a year and talk about how we're going to support nonprofits in town. And we, you know, we have a pretty good cross-section of employees who know where the priorities are and our volunteers, board members, et cetera. And so we, you know, spend pretty much a full day going through all the nonprofits trying to decide, you know, how to prioritize our giving. And on a day like this, we try to be as broad as we can. That's why we like being the presenting sponsor, so we can just leverage what everyone's doing for the benefit of the whole community.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add? Where are we at in terms of the leaderboards at this point?
Yeah. So KPCW was second on their leaderboard just a moment ago. And we've raised $589,000 as a community. Right now on the all nonprofit leaderboard, we have Mountain Trails in the first position, Park City Education Foundation in second, and Hope Alliance in the third. So it's super fun to see all these fabulous nonprofits. I know that quite often board members and staff members from each of the competing ones call each other to kind of, you know, egg each other on. So it's all in good fun. And there's lots of dollars being raised from really important causes.
Yeah, and we're also sponsoring the leaderboard. So $2,500 for the first place with number of unique donors. So, yeah, the more you give, the more it matters to your nonprofit.
Okay, stay tuned to KPCW. Where you guys going to be calling in with updates throughout the day?
We will.
Okay, Katie, Bill, thanks for your time.
Thanks,
Leslie. Thank you,
Leslie. Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:44.
Support for KPCW comes from Zions Bank, committed to community, integrity, teamwork, and trust for all customers. More information at zionsbank.com. Zions Bank. We haven't forgotten who keeps us in business.
8:45, good morning. Well, the Summit County Council recently approved rates for the rental of the new Ledges Event Center in Colville. On the phone with details about this new community gathering place, I have Assistant Summit County Manager Jana Young. Good morning, Jana.
Good morning.
So briefly, let's just start with the background of the space. It was built to replace the old Quonset hut there at the county fairgrounds. As the building was being designed, I think the county wanted it to be more than a place to show off prized tomatoes.
Correct. Yeah, it was, first of all, appreciate the opportunity to talk about what we really consider Summit County's gem. It was this $5 million investment the council made, not just in this building, but also in updating the livestock barns for the county fair. But the, you know, an opportunity to really modernize that site and to just provide an event center for particularly this side of the county, but throughout the county for folks who normally didn't have a place to, you know, host their reunions or have a trade show or a wedding. It's also a wonderful place for the county to bring in more programming and events and also to host some of our own meetings there. And so it really is a beautiful facility, and we want people to know about it and come use it.
How big is it?
It's about 11,600 square feet. It's a fairly large building.
And how many people can it hold?
So the overall capacity, which includes, so there's, to tell you a little bit about the makeout of the building, we do have a conference room, an office space, foyer, and then a multi-purpose room. And with all of that combined, we're allowed to have about 1,600 people. However, due to safety and wear and tear concerns in our rental agreement, the council wanted to limit the number of our guests at a seated event to around 500. Obviously, that's hard to control if it's you know, a trade show or something like that where people are coming in and out. So we will then pay attention to the maximum capacity number.
So what I didn't hear, though,
was... If you're planning a wedding or something, you know, limit it to that 500.
Sure. What I didn't hear was a kitchen. Usually when
there is a kitchen.
Okay.
It's more of a warming kitchen. There is an oven and a stove in there, but it's not commercial industrial size. So it's an opportunity to do some food prep and warming. And there's a microwave and a refrigerator and a sink and then a window where you can serve from as well.
Yeah. So is it open to anybody?
Yes, actually everyone and anyone. The only prohibitions are we obviously can't use it for someone's place of business. So in our rental agreement, we do prohibit that. We also restrict routine meetings as well as recreational or physical activities such as basketball, that type of thing. But it truly is open to reserve for any type of event that anyone would need.
So KPCW could have their holiday party there, but
Absolutely. The
River Horse couldn't because they're a for-profit business?
I don't think we really talk about in terms of for-profit or not. It's more based on what type of event it is. Like I mentioned, you can do fundraisers or trade shows, but in terms of, like, say you're a small business owner and you need a kitchen to do your catering business out of, it's that type of thing that we'll be prohibiting.
I got it. Now, is it indoor, outdoor space, or is it just, seating inside?
Yeah. So there are some outdoor patios, and so if you want to rent the multi-purpose room, you do have access to those patios, as well as the foyer and the kitchen. You can rent the entire facility if you also want the conference room space, and that's an additional fee, but that is a possibility.
Now, people can bring their own caterer, or do they have to use one that's approved by Summit County?
So they can use their own caterer. They can also bring in their own food if they wanted to cook their own food. The county does offer a preferred vendor list. You're not required to use it, but these are local folks that we know are familiar with our community and the building, and we know will treat it safely and that we trust to serve out of the space. So we do offer that also in case people are looking for vendors, but they certainly can use their own.
All right. And then you provide the chairs and the tables?
So we have equipped the building for the county's needs and purposes. So there are a few tables and chairs, I think, for about 250 people, because we were thinking that was what we would need for the largest event we would have in the county for employees or what have you. So folks who rent the space can absolutely use those tables and chairs. However, if you're going to need something fancier or different or more than what we offer, then we do ask that you rent tables and chairs.
Okay. And is there a way to reserve the space online?
So we are in the process of putting a website together where you can get all that information, see our rental agreement, the application, the fee structure. However, we encourage people to call our facilities department because we have found in booking these things there are often many questions, and rather than going back and forth over email, we do prefer that in-person conversation or over the phone. And that phone number is 435-336-3098. And you can obviously get more information, set up a time to tour the facility, ask any other questions about our rental agreement that you would need. But all the information as well as photos will be on our website that people can access online.
Okay. So did you need to hire somebody just to oversee the management of this space?
Yeah, well, we'll see how busy it gets. Right now we have our office manager, Josie, in our facilities department that is doing the scheduling and kind of facilitating all of those things. At this point, we're confident our facilities department can handle that, but certainly we will reevaluate if the building gets what we're hoping will get a lot of use.
Okay, and I'm guessing it's kind of blacked out starting when in July to prepare for the fair?
Oh, we haven't actually discussed that yet, but yeah, absolutely, it will be reserved for the fair. Which is always at the beginning of August. We will have our fine arts exhibits usually are displayed out of there. And in our rental agreement, it does talk about how, there's a certain period of time that we provide, but if a county has something come up or a need and it may impact your event, the county event will take precedent, and we will obviously help you find another space. But we certainly don't intend on doing that often. We will know about the fair and those prior scheduled events, and we'll be sure to schedule around that, but there is a phrase about that in our rental agreement.
Okay, but again, that website hasn't been built yet?
Not yet. We're still working with our IT department to get everything online, but the building is available for rental. So folks, like I mentioned, can call our facilities department to get more information about it. And they actually have their own website on summitcounty.org where they can where members of the public can find their phone number. And then we will certainly send out some information once that website is up and running.
Okay. Jen, anything else?
Just encourage people to come check it out. We'd love to get a lot of use out of this building. We're very excited that it's here, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it and share it with your listeners.
All right, Jana, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Assistant Summit County Manager Jana Young. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, it took 9 seasons, but Park City High School Miners football team made it to the state semi-playoff game this season. They ended up losing to the Dixie High School Flyers last night under the lights at Rice-Ecclesfield. The score 20-0. On the phone with me, I have head coach Josh Monsico. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So a tough loss. What did you tell the boys afterwards?
Oh, that I was so proud of them for what they accomplished this season. That, don't let one night ruin what they've accomplished over the entire season. And it was a really good season for them. And we learned and we grew and, as a team, we came together and really accomplished some really good things this year. So just don't overlook all the good that you accomplished.
Yeah. And certainly you've got a young team, yeah? So you've got some strong players coming back next season?
Yeah, we were quite young this year. A lot of sophomores playing for us, especially on the O-line. We had as many as 3 at times. And then a big junior class for us that started on multiple positions. And we'll return all of them next year, another year stronger and more experienced. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, let's run through the game quickly. First quarter, the Dixie quarterback, what I'm told, was just threw an amazing, beautiful pass, and no one wants to deny the kid of that.
Yeah, no, he's a good quarterback. They do a really nice job with him. He's also a dangerous runner, so when you have to worry about run and pass from the same guy, that definitely stresses your defense, and he does a really good job, and he's very well coached. They've done a nice job with him.
Yeah, and then just before halftime, I guess, Dixie making another drive and scoring, but Miners were able to block the kick?
Paul Baines was able to come off the edge, made a great block, and keep a point off the board, and great effort there.
And then third quarter, we saw some fumbles, we saw interceptions, how would you describe that?
Yeah, we had lost a couple of guys. We were down a little bit in the backfield on players, and we lost our tight end. And we're not usually a spread team. We had to go with more wide receivers than usual there for a few minutes, and that definitely got us out of our rhythm. And then we pressed a little bit, trying to make some plays. Maybe tried a little bit too hard rather than our normal running game, keeping it close and waiting for a big play to pop. And on top of that, it's a really good defense on the other side. They did a fantastic job of covering us and making the windows really tight for when we did try to make throws to make a big play.
Yeah, and you say you lost your tight end due to an injury?
He went out for a few minutes. He was just banged up and getting checked out. And we're just making sure, being cautious, making sure he was okay. And when he was cleared to go, he came back in.
Okay. And then, another fumble in the fourth quarter to score that third touchdown?
Dropped the ball. That was one thing we talked about. We had to make sure we hold on to the ball and take advantage of opportunities we got. And we had a couple opportunities. We just didn't complete them. And then, we did have some turnovers. I think you could see some of our youth at times and some of that energy kind of being a little bit much for us at times. And we pressed. I think we pressed and tried to do some things outside of what we would normally try to do.
Yeah, so did the Miners, did they play their game?
We did at times, but at times I think we got off our rhythm. I think we felt like we had to press a little bit, and we took a few more deep shots than we normally would have, as they did a good job on defense there and felt like we had to kind of make a play here and there.
So Dixie, I think, goes on to play Orem? Is that what?
Well, it'll be the winner of today's game with Orem and Pineview. I think the majority of the people will pick Orem for obvious reasons. They're quite the team. But that should be a good game. That should be a very interesting game with probably a lot of offense.
Yeah, yeah. So do you guys go and watch it?
A lot of guys are planning on heading down to watch that, yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Josh, you'd like to say about this year's?
No, just thank you. Thank you to Park City. I mean, the community came together and rallied around these guys and really supported them. Thank you to our school, our administration, all the coaches and the players. Just, you know, thank you to everybody. This was a fun season, and the support really does mean a lot, and we're really grateful for it.
Well, like I say, 9 years before it took to get back into the semifinals. So great job, Coach. We appreciate your time.
And thank you much. Appreciate it.
That's Park City High School football coach Josh Monsingo. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.